From olderandwiser.com, it's the Baby Boomer News of the Week. I'm Susan Sikora.
And I'm Bob Bates. Another mass shooting in Oregon this week, and we gotta wonder, are we becoming desensitized to mass murder?
Also this week, we learned that Pope Francis met with America's most famous county clerk, Kim Davis. But what really happened?
Plus some bad news for tall people.
And our Baby Boomer Gripe of the Week.
That's all today. Well, it's happened again, another school shooting, this time in Oregon. At a community college in Rosewood, 9 innocent people died, and the shooter killed himself. And I have to say, when I heard the news on Thursday, it was... the news itself affected me different somehow. It wasn't like Columbine or Charleston or Newtown. It was shocking, but less somehow. I turned on the news and I watched the coverage, but it didn't take long for me to turn it off. I sort of had enough because... I'll tell you the truth, that this worries me because I think I may be becoming desensitized to these mass shootings.
Well, you know, it's the same kind of thing as if you have, you and I both worked in local television shows, talk shows, and people were starting at one point, they were trying to get more sensational. Remember Morton Downey Jr., that show?
Sure.
Okay. And it was like he would do these sensational things and everybody was talking about the show. But after a while, then there were copycats and then everybody was doing sensational every day. And I used to think if you do sensational 5 days a week or 5 segments a day in the 1 hour show or whatever it is, it's no longer sensational.
You become desensitized to it. It's shocking
at
first.
And so because, this old stuff again, you know. And so, I think
is that what is happening to us with the mass shootings?
It is shocking that it still happens in a way, and yet we are not shocked as a community. And I think we are desensitized.
President Obama had to come out once again after this shooting and make his speech that he always has to make.
Mm-hmm. And he was a little angry, more than a little angry this time. And I was glad to see that. That was different. He usually sounds trying to be comforting and trying to express the shock of the nation, certainly, or the community and everybody else. But this time he was angry.
He was angry. You could see it.
And it's time for some anger about this.
Here's something he said that I thought was interesting. He said, somehow this has become routine. The reporting is routine. My response here at the podium ends up being routine. The conversation in the aftermath of it. We have become numb to this. It's interesting that he mentioned that even his response at the podium becomes routine.
Yeah.
We come to expect him to stand at the podium and say, our hearts go out to the victims. I mean,
our thoughts and prayers
are
with
thoughts and
how many
prayers
times
are with,
have you heard, if you had a dollar for every time somebody said thoughts and prayers this last week and in front of a microphone.
And we are in this gridlock in Congress with the National Rifle Association. It just seems like there's no solution. It can't move.
There's one other thing. They talked about the young guy who did this. And again, of course, people didn't want to talk about his name.
Well, that's another good question. Let's talk about that.
Okay.
The sheriff, the local sheriff, didn't want to release his name right in the beginning. He was actually urging the media to not mention his name because it just glorifies him. Mm-hmm. Do we glorify mass murderers when we put their name and picture on TV?
Well, you know, partly yes and no. Yes, partly we do, because we give them the attention. The limelight, I believe he said in a note, he said, seems the more people you kill, the more you're in the limelight. It was something, I'm paraphrasing, but that's probably close to what he said. Limelight seems to be a big goal.
It seems that that's what they want.
Yes,
you know, they write these manifestos, not for themselves, but they want people to read them. They want they want to be heard.
But you cannot report on a story and not tell everybody who did it. I mean, it's part of the facts of the story.
That's
I don't
part
think
of journalism.
You have that option as a journalism.
Well, you know, this is a great question to consider because, yes, journalists would always bristle at the idea of not giving all the facts that they know.
Mm-hmm.
But let's say, for example, you know, you're covering a live hostage crisis and you're in a helicopter and you're hovering over and you see the SWAT teams down below. You know, we know enough now that journalists will avert their cameras so that, the guy inside isn't watching what's happening on the outside. I think there is latitude for journalists to consider.
But in the situation you just described, what they cover as it's happening, because it's live, it's a live event, could jeopardize the safety and the and could influence the outcome.
They could jeopardize the safety of the hostages held inside. But what what about the safety of America and the people in schools across America? Those are being jeopardized.
Thing, though, if you do not say this man's name right away, the first thing you're thinking, if you have a curious mind, is who was it? Yeah. Now, we know that most people, unless you lived in that area or knew this kid, you would not, his name doesn't mean a whole lot to you except for what he has done a week later or days later. But the idea is, otherwise you're going, well, who was it? Who was it? Who was it? So you kind of create curiosity, and maybe you need to say the name so that it moves on.
That does seem logical. At some point, you're going to need to dissolve the curiosity. But maybe as a nation, we find a way to not sort of sensationalize and dramatize this person's life.
But I think we want to know also about what motivated him. Because if you don't get, to me, it's always you go back and you keep asking. The most important questions or the most interesting answers will come not from the who, what, when, where, but why and how.
Well, I suppose it could be argued that we learn things from discovering what their motivations might have been and trying to prevent that from happening to somebody
else.
Not only
that, but when you say desensitized, I got to bring this up, and I don't want to get accused of being a Luddite or a little old lady here, but the truth of the matter is we are all desensitized to some degree by the technology we use. And I think we have to remember, I don't care, that the tech stuff, it's these things are gadgets, whether it's a phone or an iPad or anything. These are tools, but they're not people. And this kid was in his room. I heard in one report, they described that he was in his room a lot with the door closed and online. And I think what's happening is many people are doing this over and over, is they're substituting human interaction for interaction with, basically, let's face it, it's a machine.
No, I get where you're headed with this. I you know, certainly his message was out there on the internet. Mm-hmm. People, he was in a chat room with people, and he was telling people that what his intentions were. And some of those people, interestingly enough, were goading him on, sort of telling him, "Go ahead, go do it. Here's the best way to go about it."
Right, and you know, you don't.
However,
know,
I don't think.
When you go for a chat room online, you don't know who you're going to get in response. It would have been better had he shut the computer or walked out of the room and had, you know, sat down and had a conversation with a friend or a relative or a parent or a brother or sister or whomever.
Yeah. I'm not sure you can necessarily blame all technology, however.
No, I don't blame the technology. I'm not blaming the I think technology is fabulous. It's fabulous in many areas, for the health area, for instance, or, there's a lot of things. And you want information fast, you can get it. But I think you have to remember that this thing that is so incredible is a tool.
Yeah.
It's a tool, not a person.
Another interesting side note that came out of this story was that Donald Trump said, in reaction to the Oregon shooting, if you had a teacher or somebody with guns in that room, you would have been a lot better off. This is about self-defense, pure and simple. So he was clearly siding with the gun folks. He was clearly setting himself up as someone who believes that the way to fix gun violence is to give everybody a gun.
Yeah. Do you know a lot of teachers?
No.
I've known people who taught on the university level. I had a brother-in-law.
So what are you trying to say? What is your point?
I'm telling you, I don't think these people are gun-toting people in most cases. I don't think they're going to carry. They're not going to put in their highlighters or their iPads or everything else that they're going to take to school and their lecture notes or whatever they're going to use, and also their
guns. It is a terrifying thing to imagine that as a teacher, you would have to also be prepared for a gun battle in your classroom.
It's scary. I mean,
you're gonna take your gun. Make sure you got bullets in that before you go off to, you know, get your lunch. Got your bullets for your gun. I mean, it's terrifying.
Yeah. I mean, and when you think about it, even like playgrounds for elementary schools, you know, they're not barricaded. They don't have a great big wall around them. There is security in many schools, and certainly in high schools as well. But, you know, the truth is that a lot of these places are accessible.
Not to belabor, not to belabor the Donald Trump thing, but he also mentioned in this article that he said he has a New York license to carry, saying if somebody attacks me, they're going to be shocked. So I guess he was basically saying that he's armed. He's walking
that
around.
That is frightening.
Do you think he's
got
to be kidding? Certainly he's kidding.
And of course, you know, he probably has somebody who walks alongside him that he pays to reach in the pocket and get the gun and shoot it for him. But
can you imagine a presidential candidate telling America he's packing heat?
You know what? In this day and age and with him in the race, yes.
Okay, let's move on to our next story this week. And it was a kind of a dramatic one, I think. It started small, but then the news started leaking out a little at a time that Kim Davis, that county clerk in Kentucky, had a secret meeting with the Pope. What did you think when you heard this news?
Well, first I was disappointed, and I'll get back to why in a minute. I was disappointed, and then of course it was, and then I was talking to a friend of mine, and she said, "Oh, I bet it's a lie."
That's what I thought. I said, "Okay, whoever is spreading this news doesn't know what they're saying. It is so outrageous. There is absolutely no way that the Pope would deign to meet with Kim Davis." I said, "No."
Right. I think the people who are liberal and lean liberal don't want to think he met with her.
Right.
And certainly don't want to think that he said, stay strong. I think the people who are conservative want to think not only that he met with her, but because he said strong, he sides with her and he applauds her for her stance. And what I think is the truth is somewhere in the middle. And I think it has to do with the fact that this Pope is very different. He's, for one thing, the most important thing I think about him, besides the fact that he is so, his whole thing is forgiveness. And he's very, very, I would say, non-judgmental. And I don't mean that means that he's saying something like murder is right. He's not. He's not mixing up right from wrong. But there's a difference between discerning right from wrong and judging someone who's done one or the other.
So what are you saying? That he met with her without judging her actions? Is that basically?
I don't know.
Yeah. Why?
I don't know. And you know what?
Certainly he has a, there's a long list of people that any Pope is being asked to meet. Mm-hmm. And you don't just randomly pick these people. Why do you think the Vatican kept it a secret at first?
You mean about Kim Davis?
Yeah. Only Kim Davis and her lawyer released the information. Why do you think that the Vatican didn't want people? It seemed as though the Vatican did not want people to know that he met with her.
Well, first of all, she was part of a group, okay? And there was
she
a group.
She claims that she meeting. And her husband met privately for 10 minutes with the Pope.
Well, I heard that she was part of a group, a larger group. Yeah. Now, a large group can meet with the Pope and they could, you know, he could go in there, shake their hand, say hello, a few words, and move on to the next person.
There is a discrepancy in these stories because you're right. The Vatican did say that it was part of a group. He wasn't quite sure who she was, maybe, or something. It could be like
and
that.
And be careful, too, because these statements come from, don't mistake that the Vatican doesn't have people who are excellent at public relations, even though they may wear Roman collars.
Yeah, right.
They understand probably as well, maybe close to, you know, Donald Trump, we said, knows how to manipulate the media. Yeah. There are people around the Pope. So the Pope is probably
well, that's it. He
not
didn't invite
every single
her.
Decision
even,
here.
Even the Vatican admits that it wasn't the Pope who invited her. It was one of the side guys, you know.
And he's non-judgmental enough that even if he probably knew who she was when they told him and she was part of the group. And he's not the mean-spirited person that would say, tell her to leave the group. He's not taking sides. Everybody, you know, this whole Francis effect, everybody wants to glom on to, you know, his robes, kind of. And the truth is, he has something for everybody.
Let me ask you this. What do you think about Kim Davis glomming on to his robes?
know. I think she's not stupid, or I think she's got some PR people working for her now.
Do you think somehow she did glom onto his robes? I mean, the invitation came from the Vatican. She didn't call and ask.
If I were in her position, or I were
You're
in
not
the position
say
of
no,
her lawyer,
you?
Of course not.
Of course
it's
not.
It's a good PR opportunity. It's a good photo.
And then what? Are you not going to post the pictures on Facebook? Yeah. You're gonna.
Right, exactly. Everybody thinks they're, you know,
so maybe it's not Kim Davis. We can't blame Kim Davis for doing this.
Well, we don't know. As I say, it could have been her lawyer. It could have been PR people who were working with her. I mean, you know, the bottom line is, I think Pope Francis, even though he might have said to her, stay strong, if he did in fact say that, whether or not he thinks she did the right thing, you know, she can stay strong. And we said, we talked about this last time, was she can stay strong. She can believe what she wants. If she wants to believe that she should not give out licenses for gay people to get married, she can believe all she wants. But while she has that job and she is paid to do that job, she has to uphold the law. And the law says they get the license. So if you don't want to give it out, believe what you want, but move over and let somebody else take the job and do it.
I think we're clear about the fact that the Pope wouldn't condone necessarily her doing something illegal, but at some level, he may or may not have wanted to show his support for her. We just don't know, right?
Yeah, well, I mean,
and there's nothing wrong with that. I'm not trying to bash the Pope at all. In fact, to be clear, you're the card-carrying Catholic here, you know, and you're the one who. But I have to agree that it does seem as though Pope Francis, at most, just wanted to extend sort of some not support for her cause necessarily, but just, you know, be well.
I think this guy would shake hands with anyone. I think he would be there to give forgiveness if somebody sought it from him.
You know, someone on his team had to know that meeting with Kim Davis was going to have an effect.
Mm-hmm. Maybe
they didn't. Didn't weigh that out. That's what
maybe when the first conversation happened about this, or whether somebody had to pitch her name on a list, or whether the Vatican reached out, somebody had to say. Maybe they said, maybe she wants forgiveness, or maybe she wants guidance, or maybe she wants a conversation, or maybe we don't know. We don't have enough facts about this, frankly.
True.
And I think people.
I think that's probably the best thing you could say is that we really don't have enough facts about this.
We don't have the facts. All I can tell you is if I had to describe this man as one way, other than the fact that he's warm and charismatic and friendly and down to earth, he's very non-judgmental. It's very hard to do. I work on it all the time.
Okay, time to move on. We're moving on.
I ain't close.
A new study out from United Press International has reported that cancer and height are linked. Mm. Boy, I don't like that. I'm 6'4". I do not like to know that cancer and height are linked. Yeah. A Swedish study, which was released on Friday, suggests that taller people have higher incidence of breast and skin cancer, as well as other types of cancer. Mm. Your cancer risk, get this, your cancer risk grows by 18% in women and by 11% in men for every 4 inches in height. I mean, every 4 inches? Like, where does that put me?
Starting where?
Well, that's a good point.
What's normal? What's normal? Is it 5'3" normal or 5'5" normal? I mean, I'm 5'5". Or 5'4", probably shrinking a tiny bit here and there with age. But, you know, I had breast cancer and I was not 6'2" when I got.
Yeah, yeah. So what does this mean exactly? I bring this up not because of the study itself, but more about my reaction to it. It scares me. But what am I going to do about it?
Well, you can't shrink.
I can't shrink. There's nothing I can do. I wonder if we are living in a world of fear from all these studies and all this scientific quote-unquote data that is being thrown at us by news people in little bits and chunks that just don't. There's nothing we can do about it. It's not helping us in any way. It's just scaring us.
Yeah, well, you know, again, we're kind of back to, I mean, technology makes it possible to put out a lot of information. And this is, you know, in many ways, in probably, who knows, in many ways, it's good.
But I think that the media likes to report these little headlines that look exciting. You know, wine, have a glass of wine every day. Research shows it'll help you with your heart. Or don't have a glass of wine every day because you're going to get a heart attack. I mean,
or breast cancer.
It's scary.
Yeah.
Is the media scaring us to death? Are we more scared today than we were, you know, back in the 60s?
I think we know more, and we can selectively choose to read what we want, and we hear what is most sensational.
Are we suffering from news overload?
Maybe.
Yeah.
I think that's a good possibility. And sometimes, you know, go back to Dr. Andrew Weil. One of the things he says in his work, he'll say, take a news break. Go on a news fast.
I have imagined going to a mountaintop cabin and then turning off the cell phone, turning off the TV, not allowing myself to hear any news for a week, and just watching the sun come up and the sun go down and the wind blow through the trees, and not have the opportunity to be worried by this new study or this whatever's happening in the world that's scaring us to death about our future.
Do you think you could do it?
I don't know. That's a great
question. That's the question. I think it's like being non-judgmental. It sounds easy. And the truth is, oh, great, you know, a cabin and nothing to worry about and everything. And after, like, say, the middle of day three, you've got four more days, and you're thinking, oh, I wonder what's going on. I'm a little bored, and I've watched the trees and the leaves blow in the wind. And, you know, we get antsy.
We also live in a world that is so fraught with danger, and things that could happen if we're not careful. Make sure you have plenty of food in case of an earthquake. You know, if how close do you live to the ocean? Because you could be killed by a tsunami, because they come every so many years. And there are so many things that scare us to death.
You're worried about the future and what might happen. Mm-hmm. And you can worry yourself probably into exactly.
I'm sure into a heart attack, one of the keys to happiness is trying to mitigate and minimize worry.
And also making the best of where you are and what you have.
So constantly preparing for the worst is probably one of the worst things we can do.
I would think so, because a lot of it may never happen.
Absolutely. Well, let's move on now to our baby boomer gripe of the week.
Oh, it's just...
you always have a good one. Last week it was... bathtubs, as I recall.
Rub it up, dub, get rid of the tub. I'm still on that.
I did not see that one coming last week, but I can only imagine what you've got this week. What is your gripe of the week, Susan?
Well, color has always been important to me. When I was a kid, my mother could probably get me to clean my room for a new box of Crayolas. Okay.
All right.
I loved it. I loved the smell of the crayons. I loved when they were all brand new and pointy and shiny.
I hated
when they got old, I have to peel the paper and, I need maybe a new box, even though I like my old ones, but you know, and the different shades in the bigger boxes. I loved all that stuff. And I think here's what my gripe is. Sometimes things need to be color-coded. My gripe of the week is that we should use more color. And color, by the way, color coding could help in terms of, for instance, where you are. If you go down a hall, I remember the TV station we worked in San Francisco, okay? And I remember going around the halls, and they all looked alike.
They were all white, yes.
Oh, God. You know, I'm trying to find the ladies' room, and that was in one. And then all the rest, and that was near the elevator. And then all the rest kind of looked alike.
Yeah.
And I thought, why don't they make these different colors? Saying one has to be bright blue and one has to be bright green. It doesn't have to look like a kindergarten.
So in a hospital, for example, instead of having every hallway white, have one hallway blue, one hallway pink, one hallway green. I gotcha.
Yes.
So you know where you're going. I'm on the green hallway and then I turn left onto the blue hallway.
This could be a bad reaction to going to Catholic school and having to wear uniforms and everybody was in the same color.
This was your gripe of the week, but also you've provided a solution for the week.
That's right. Try to get ahead. All right, what about you?
Well, my gripe of the week is really an oldie but a goodie, but it seems to have sort of become worse and worse. We still have a landline. Many people have gotten rid of their landline in their home, but ours we still left. And unfortunately, though, it has been bombarded by telemarketers, and we don't even answer it anymore, but it rings throughout the day, and we just let it ring and go to the machine. We check the machine once every few weeks to see if... you know, some old relative has tried to reach us. But the business of the do not call list doesn't work. It does not work anymore. Mm. It might have worked in the beginning, but now it doesn't. So you can be spammed all day long on your home phone. And to me, it's just not fair.
If I get a human being on the other side and then they start with their rap and the first thing they're asking me is how are you or something, if it is a live human being, I say, hi, I'm fine. Put me on your do not call list.
Yeah, me too.
And usually that ends the call almost immediately.
Because they really don't care who you are.
Breath.
It does amaze me that there are people in this world that they are able to sell product to. I can't believe anybody would respond to any pitch made by a telemarketer. It makes me want to remove my landline and only use my cell phone. But the problem with that is if you call emergency services from your cell phone, they don't know automatically where you're calling from. So you have to give them the address.
And also,
that can delay the emergency vehicles that are coming to your house. So you want to call, if you can, from your landline because they see immediately the address and they know right where you are. All right, Susan Sikora, thank you once again so much for being with us. What are your parting thoughts for the week?
Just color code everything.
Color code everything. Susan Sikora's thoughts for the week. Color code everything. All right. Well, for all the news and information for baby boomers and beyond, make sure you check us out at olderandwiser.com. See you next time.